following show is closed captioned for the reality impaired. The Jerry Bader Show.
906. There's something, for whatever reason, I have been neglecting to mention. And that is my opinion of the return of the Series 24, Live Another Day. Which kind of sounds like a Bond title, doesn't it? It just does. This is a 12-hour effort, not 24, but each hour does happen in real time, allegedly. Just the way the series did when it left the air 4 years ago. Jack Bauer has been a fugitive for 4 years. He's caught in London, but you quickly find out it was intentional to free Chloe, who's being interrogated because she's part of a Snowden-type group now. And just as is always the case with 24, there's always the phony bad person. They had to get to the real bad person a bit more quickly this time because it's only 12 episodes. A woman has commandeered U.S. drones. And there are really two issues being talked about here. Are the Snowden types really heroes? And the dangers of drones, could they ever be taken control by someone else? Jack Bauer proves that, look, I'm trying to stop the president from being killed. I'm trying to help. Even though the terrible things he did as the series wound down, he is still a fugitive over those things. So they take him into custody. And with Chloe's help, he proves that he was trying to stop something terrible from happening. And now he has a CIA agent who believes him. She just happens to be a hot blonde. I'm sure it's a coincidence. Actually, she kind of looks like the woman who plays his daughter. What's her name? That played Kim. I can't think of the actress's name right now. She kind of looks like her. It's weird. But what's my assessment of it so far? It's pretty good. It is pretty good. It does have, and Benjamin Bratt is the CIA field chief in London. It's pretty good. It's got the feel of the old episode of the old series. Where it's very different is Jack is on the outside looking in, which was going on half the time even when he was with the government anyway. But it's got my attention. I looked forward to it last night. I don't know how I would compare. It's just different from the original series. I don't know how else to describe it. The one thing I know, you know, Jack always seemed like he was a step behind in the old series. In this one, he seems more where he's on top of things, but the government is getting in his way because he's a fugitive. No, not her. That's Audrey. Okay, that's the woman playing the agent. You want whoever played his daughter, Kim. She has not been in the series yet, and I don't know if she's going to be. So you might... She has not shown up. So I don't know if she's going to show up throughout the course of these 12 episodes. But anyway, the actress who's playing the CIA agent kind of looks like... I just can't think of her name right now. She was controversial, Jason, that hockey player said untoward things about her. I can't remember her name right now. But anyway, so far, it's got my attention. Yeah, Alicia something. Anyway, it's not important. It's not important. But so far, it does. That's it. Alicia Cuthbert. Yeah. That would be her. I would say if you're a 24 fan and you haven't gotten into it, it's worth getting into. It definitely is. And you can catch up these days online. So I would. I most definitely do that. It really is. It really is very, very good. It's very different though from the other series. All right, I want to get into something here that's going to take me a few minutes. Actually, it's probably going to take me most of the rest of the half hour. And then I'm going to take some calls on this after 9:30. There's a very long piece in the Weekend Wall Street Journal. It appears on Saturday, but it's called the Weekend Wall Street Journal. It's a very long essay by Phil Clay. Phil Clay served in the Marines, including a tour of duty in Iraq, and is an author of a short story collection called Redeployment. He addresses the belief by many people that almost all combat veterans are damaged goods, that they're broken. It's long. I couldn't read the whole thing to you, so I want to read part of it to you. There's some select portions here where he makes his case. The name of the piece is Duty and Pity. He doesn't quite connect the dots, but here's essentially what he's saying. Vietnam veterans came home to hatred. Vietnam veterans were bad people. By the way, liberals now deny that they greeted Vietnam vets this way. It's like Holocaust denial. They deny that these guys came home and were spat upon and sworn at. Now, that none of that ever happened now. Of course it did. What he notices, what Phil Clay notices, is that there's something different that Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans are facing, and it is pity. This is the product of so-called enlightened liberalism. They know better now than to hate the warrior because they hated the war, so they pity the warrior. And they assume that the warrior is broken with post-traumatic stress disorder or some other psychological malady as a result of being in combat or even just being in service. Let me just read some of this to you. Occasionally, someone will inform me I have post-traumatic stress disorder. They're never medical professionals, just strangers who've learned that I served. One man told me that Iraq veterans are all going to snap in 10 years, and so since I'd been back for 3 years, I had 7 left. Another, after I explained that I didn't suffer from PTSD and that my deployment as a staff officer in Iraq had been mild, said that I needed to have an honest conversation with myself. In other words, he doesn't realize he's damaged. And since I'm a writer, I've been asked more times than I can count whether my writing is an act of therapy. I'm never offended. These are genuinely concerned people trying to reach out. But I find it all strange, especially since the assumption never seems to be that I have the actual symptoms of PTSD, intrusive memories of some traumatic event, numbing behaviors, a state of persistent hyperarousal. Instead, it is more in line with the Iraq veteran Brian Van Reet's observation that PTSD has graduated from a diagnosis into an idiom used by soldiers and civilians to talk about all kinds of suffering, loss, grief, guilt, rage, and unrewarded sacrifice. For a certain subset of the population, my service means that I, along with other veterans, must be, in some ill-defined way, broken. I then skip ahead. Even the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David Finkel, who has produced some of the bravest and most admirable reporting on the Iraq War and its aftermath, can fall into uncomfortable generalizations. In his recent book, Thank You for Your Service, he writes of a battalion of 800 men. All the soldiers came home broken in various degrees, even the ones who are fine. I don't know what it means to be simultaneously broken and fine, he writes. I do have friends with real PTSD, and which they manage with varying degrees of success. I also have friends whose pride in their service is matched by feelings of sorrow, anger, and bitterness, but I wouldn't classify them as broken. Pity places the focus on what's wrong with veterans, but for veterans looking at the society that sent them to war, it may not feel like they're the ones with the most serious problems. Worse, those warm feelings of pity toward us, broken veterans, can too easily turn ugly. After the April 2nd shooting spree at Fort Hood that left 3 soldiers dead and 16 wounded, the Huffington Post ran an article titled, "This map shows the deadly aftermath of war right here at home," complete with a graphic showing killings committed by veterans. Such ticking time bomb articles usually fail to put their numbers in perspective. Indeed, one Marine who had trained as an intelligence analyst crunched the murder rate numbers for a VA blog and found that if the Huffington Post numbers were accurate, the rate for veteran-committed homicide would still be a fourth of that for the general population. The Huffington Post later took down the article, admitting that it was incomplete and misleading. I move ahead again. Kristen Rouse, a veteran and blogger who was struck by another article alerting fearful readers to zip codes that have large numbers of veterans with PTSD, wrote that the article treated a PTSD database like a sex offender registry. In other words, you had to be warned of where broken veterans were. A recent opinion piece in the New York Times even tried to link combat trauma with membership in the KKK. If vets are truly broken, after all, there's really no telling what they might do. This perspective is more than a little bizarre. Veterans rank among our most engaged, productive citizens. Just look at nonprofit groups such as The Mission Continues, which provides public service fellowship for veterans across the country. Reporting for duty in your community, their website says, or at the engagement efforts of groups such as the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, which strives to connect the 99% of the population who haven't served in Iraq or Afghanistan with the 1% who have. I move ahead to the end. War subjects some of its participants to more than any person can bear, and it destroys them. War makes others stronger. For most of us, it leaves a complex legacy. And though many veterans appreciate the well-meaning sentiments behind even the most misdirected pity, I can't help feeling that all of us, especially those who are struggling, deserve a little less pity and a little more respect. Again, that's portions of his piece that ran in Saturday's Wall Street Journal. I have more on this in 5 minutes. This isn't as new as you might imagine. It's 9:19.
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.